staff who are prepared to give us reports and updates that are on our agenda. So I'm going to call the meeting to order. Welcome those of you who are listening in. We've got a big agenda today. Generally, we don't take testimony at the work committee meeting. We'll see how the agenda goes. But welcome you to listen into our conversation. These committees are basically for staff and the commissioner members of the committee to get in-depth briefings and discussions. And that's pretty much how we run the Wolf Committee. So with that, we'll take the agenda in order. And I think we have some updates regarding wolves, and the first is conflict resolution in the Northeast, and I assume that includes updates about what's going on right now with the wolf livestock conflict and where we are. So is that Donnie or Julia? Go ahead and get started.
You bet. This is Donnie, and I'll just kind of give you a quick overview, just a couple minutes, and then ask you to, if you have questions and want to dial more into a particular area than another. So we have been, preparing for the 2020 grazing season. We've had several meetings with the WAG, also preparing from that perspective of kind of what we're doing different or what we're improving upon and those kinds of things. A couple things I'll highlight there, and I'm just hitting the highlights. I'm not going to go into every element or every detail, but some of the energy has been around refining the duties of range riding and the accountability of range riding. I think everybody understands the history there with audit findings and investigations and those kinds of things, and so trying to raise that bar. WAG has spent a tremendous amount of time working on that, and we have a document now that is a good faith effort from the last several WAG meetings that incorporate out to all of the WAG members that's going to be due. The other one is, in terms of preparation, is to try to focus a little more on chronic conflict areas, and are there some new and novel approaches, the things we can do? Well, improve other things, but also are there some new kinds of things? And so I think one of the things we talked about before and we have circulated to WAG, and there's been some media around it, is a list of, six or eight ideas that range from some very early pilot projects in the past year or so, things like colored cloth collars with cowbells on wolves, refurbishing the ear transmitter tags that went into cows and maybe fitting those onto these colored collars so that cows are, the collars and the cowbell obviously, so that cows are more visible, and you can hear them at a distance if you're trying to locate cows, and then attaching a transmitter to that so that you can actually go find cows and check on them and try to increase the effectiveness of the range riding tool from that perspective. And then there were a number of other items in there. I'm just highlighting a couple, and I think that you all probably saw that in the media as well. And so, and of course, our conflict staff have been working with producers in prep for the 2020 grazing season. We're at that moment right now where cows are out on dispersed grazing allotments, or they're being moved out as we speak. So we've kind of officially launched into that, and it varies by area on kind of when that turnout is, but same pattern that we've seen in the past. It's the grazing plan, so to speak, between the producer and the forest, and what their turnout dates are and all those kinds of things. So we're in that process. Going to switch a little bit to kind of the recent activities. So I think you saw on our public updates that we had, and we talked about it briefly, we've had some depredations in the wedge pack. that you know, we had conversations around. We also initiated trapping up in the wedge pack. So the wedge pack, we did reach the one of the guidance thresholds in the protocol for the 3 and 30 days, the 3 depredations in 30 days. So we queued that up for discussion for potential next steps. But in that, there's more than one guidance threshold. There's a number of items. There is the number of depredations within a time period. You know, have proactive non-lethals been in place? Are there kind of responsive non-lethal deterrents that we could try? And so we look at all of those items, and in the wedge scenario, did not recommend lethal removal. Thought that we could focus a little more on the responsive deterrent measures to see if there's other things we could try. Along with that, deploying traps up there to try to collar a wolf. Here recently, staff did capture and collar an adult wolf in the wedge pack. And then, I do want to call out that the producer had met that expectation for one of those guidance in the protocol is at least 2 proactive deterrent measures. And the producer had met that. So I wanted to give credit for that. And, but we thought there were some other responsive kinds of deterrent measures we could do. In those deterrent measures, there was a range riding that took place. It was at a period of time where cows were going from a more confined pasture type setting to dispersed grazing. And there are multiple range riders now working in that area. And then the other one that I wanted to provide a quick update on is in the Togo Pack territory. We had a depredation a few days ago in the Togo Pack territory. That fits within the 10-month window of depredations in the past. So I'm using that term because, as you know, in our protocol, we kind of look at these rolling windows of 30 days or 10 months, the 3 depredations in 30 days or 4 and 10 months. In the 10-month window, there are 7 depredations in 10-month window. Now, when I say that, it's a rolling window. So there are a few depredations that recently dropped off, and there's a few depredations that are about to drop off. But at that period of time when we documented this 7th depredation, there were 7 in the 10-month period. As we did in the wedge, we have met internally. We've looked at all of the considerations from our plan and protocol, compared that to the very case-specific information from the Togo, and are, you know, working internally and soon with Steve Pazanger, the regional director, and Kelly Swisswin, the director of the agency, on what potential next steps might be for the Togo. So that's information just now is we just posted that information to our website here about an hour ago, maybe. So it just went out the door in terms of that most recent depredation. And then, of course, if there is any decision on action, we'll be notifying the public of that as well. So I was going to pause there to see if there's any questions on those items or where you would like to dig a little deeper.
Donnie, I have a question. This is Molly. Oh, sorry, Kim. Kim. May I ask Donnie a question?
Go ahead, Molly.
I apologize.
Yeah.
I was just curious, is on the Togo Pack depredation, was that on public land or private land?
I'm going to answer that, and then other folks correct me. That was on private land. And right now, as I described, those cattle are in that transition period of being turning out onto the dispersed grazing on the adjacent public lands. Let me back up. It was an injury. And we believed it to be about a week old. And because of the timing, we believe that occurred on those private lands.
Thank you.
Thanks, Donnie. And I just want to acknowledge and appreciate your report emphasizing how individualized we have to approach each of these incidents, that it really is case by case. And, you know, I think even in your sort of brief overview, you've brought that out, how each incident is is carefully evaluated, and the decisions are very much case by case, and the protocol provides guidance. But I just think it's really important to acknowledge that, and I think your report brought it out. Before I ask for any more questions or comments from the committee members, I was wondering, I don't know, Kelly, whether you've been brought in yet and want to make any comments, or if you'd just like to pass.
I've been made generally aware. I've not received the formal recommendation from staff. Expect that sometime probably today. And so I'll reserve anything till I've actually seen all the data.
Okay. Thanks, Kelly. So committee members, any other questions or comments? Great. Well, thanks, Donnie. What else do you have in terms of report? Donnie, before you go on, Steve just joined us, Steve Bezangra. Steve, we just received an overview of events in the Northeast, and Donnie talked a little bit about the wedge pack and the discussions and decision-making that's going on there, as well as our just recent Togo Pack incident. Is there anything that you want to comment on in regards to those?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Kim. Sorry, I was having technological challenges. I'm going to leave my camera off. I think that'll help us out. From what I caught, I was actually able to listen before you were aware that I was actually before I got promoted to panelist. And so I don't have anything to offer at this point. I guess if there were any just any additional questions that Donnie hadn't addressed for any of you, just let me know. Happy to discuss those now or at any point in the future.
Great. Thanks, Steve. Okay. So Donnie, did you have more that you wanted to provide for us?
Yeah, that was most of it. Just two brief items. One is, part of this falls under this heading of conflict monitoring briefing, but and I'll describe why. So I wanted to let folks know
Donnie, maybe you should turn your camera off because we're having a little trouble with your internet.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. So let me know if it breaks up again, and I'm going to carry the laptop into the house and we'll try it there. Just an update that, here a couple weeks ago, we got the green light with the COVID situation for our wolf biologists to start engaging in the field and trapping. And so they have done that. We have a prioritization of the kind of the areas that we tackle first. And this is a time of year where you try to jump on opportunity. It's time of year when most packs are denning, and there's a greater likelihood for us being successful catching wolves because of that. And so we've seen a focus on packs that have been involved in conflict and packs that are part of our predator prey research project. I just want to let folks know that they're out there and doing that. We've had trapping in the Togo Pack area. We've had trapping in the Kettles Pack area. We've had trapping in the Wedge Pack area, the Tianaway Pack area, and then most recently, and the Grouse Flats Pack area, and then most recently now in the Lead Point. And so we're into that time of year where we're very busy doing that. And some of those areas that maybe we weren't successful in the first go at, we're kind of picking those up here in another, few weeks or so to give it a second try. And so just wanted to let folks know that. And then the other one was, I think you've seen some media attention about the, and Steve can help me out here, the media attention about the coordination with Stevens County Sheriff's Department and their wildlife specialist, Mr. Jeff Flood, in the department. And the reason I wanted to just touch on that is I did talk with media. I think there were some inaccuracies out there, and I'm not poking media at all. I had a good conversation with media, and it was a matter of word choice and stuff. And so right now we're working in good faith with the sheriff's office to try to see where the wheelhouse of the department and the wheelhouse of the sheriff's office kind of intersect. And at that point that we believe is when there is escalating depredation and involving a private property, you know, livestock in this case, and our resources get stretched very thin. And so we are working on an MOU with the sheriff's office. So what that would look like so that we all understand our roles and responsibilities. And as my 20 years with the department, anytime you work on a legal document like that, you make sure that your legal counsel takes a look at it so you understand exactly what you're saying and what the legal ramifications are and those kinds of things. So that was a little bit different than what we saw in the media recently, and I just wanted to call that out, that it's not a step that it's an approval or anything like that. It's a step of just good process and having your attorneys look at legal documents before you sign the dotted line. So I'll kind of pause there and see if Steve wants to fill in any of the gaps or if there's any questions.
Yeah, thanks, Donnie. Just that I did have a chance to follow up with Sheriff Mankey yesterday. He actually was not aware of the most recent article. He did have a chance to review it. He was also disappointed in the article, and from the standpoint of the representation of the relationship with the sheriff's office, as well as the direction that he clearly understood relative to the department just working through our normal legal channels in a review of a memorandum of understanding between parties and the AG's role in that review for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So he was actually going to loop back with Capitol Press and have that discussion. I felt like that was appropriate since the sheriff was quoted several times in the article, and there had been an interview there, and as well as the article referencing information that was actually a little bit outdated. So sheriff was going to touch base with Capitol Press, I think it's important that we do clarify the role that the Attorney General's office has. I think it's important for both staff and for the public to understand why we would be working toward a memorandum of agreement or understanding with the sheriff's office. And what we would like to do is to get this project completed and be able to report, tell the story between or with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the sheriff's office, representing the facts and the information around the MOU. We look forward to being able to get that completed. And if we are successful in getting that completed, then telling our story.
Committee members, do you have any questions or comments?
I do. This is Molly.
Go ahead, Molly.
My question is, from what I've been reading, I guess if you're comfortable now, I would like to understand what the department's understanding of the memorandum of agreement is. What's kind of being portrayed, if you are a layperson, is that the sheriff's department is wanting to help trap to add collars to packs, and then you'll read and it's to trap for lethal removal. And if you're comfortable to sort of clarify now, Steve, that I would love to hear what the department is hoping to get out of this, if anything, or whatever you're comfortable, you know, kind of sharing with us.
So Molly, I appreciate a little bit of latitude there relative to the fact that it's an ongoing discussion/negotiation with the sheriff's office. So I would be most comfortable in talking about the department and what we see as the benefit for the Department of Fish and Wildlife to be able to receive assistance from the Stevens and Ferry County Wildlife Specialist. And so as Donnie had described, we are looking at this where when we are in depredation, chronic depredation situations or repeat depredations situations where staff resources are limited, and we may be looking to be able to have trapping for monitoring purposes be going on in other areas, and yet we have demand for trapping for the purposes of lethal removal to be occurring in a separate pack area. We think that under that situation, that the county wildlife specialist could play an assistance role for the Department of Fish and Wildlife during a lethal removal operation. So I'm comfortable that that is consistent with what the department is interested in pursuing. And I don't feel comfortable in speaking on behalf of the sheriff's office. And so I guess I'd leave it at that. But that has clearly been presented to the sheriff's office as the department's approach and the content that we have provided for AG review so that we can hopefully move that document for sheriff's consideration.
Can I tag on to that, Commissioner Thorburn?
Yes, by all means, Donnie.
So I just wanted to add on to what Steve said so that it's clear for the public and for all of you and everybody else that when we do those that kind of operations to whether it's to deploy a collar or to lethal removal, you know, we have some authorizations that we have for state employees for the use of the drug and for immobilizing a wolf and a consultation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So for incidental capture of a federally listed species like a lynx or grizzly bear, those don't apply to external staff. And so in that, what Steve just described, where if we've had this situation before, so it's real, where our resources are very thin. We have ongoing normal kinds of monitoring going on, and we have depredations in multiple packs. We may have lethal removal in multiple packs. We've seen that. And then an opportunity comes up, like there is a calf carcass that's recently depredated. We could put a trap around that, and our folks are deployed elsewhere. And that's a nexus here with the sheriff's office where Mr. Flood would be assisting in putting metal in the ground, but not actually conducting the lethal removal and not actually immobilizing a wolf. So I wanted to put a little more substance to that conversation so that when Steve just said a moment ago, helping with the lethal removal, that felt a little, sorry, Steve, not to poke you here, that just felt a little open, and I want to give a little more context to it. And those are the kinds of dialogues that we're having with the sheriff and others. And so because it's new ground, and there's a lot of important steps and nuances, and so we're in those conversations with the sheriff's office.
Molly, is that good?
Yeah, that was more than I was expecting. Thank you.
Yeah, that was very helpful. Thank you for sharing it. Any other questions on any of these issues from other committee members? I'm going to actually loop back to the initial report on the work that the WAG is doing.
Barbara.
And,
Kim, this is Barbara. I was muted, but I was trying to get your attention. May I still ask a quick question?
Go ahead, Barbara. Yes.
Thank you. With respect to the Steve and Donnie's local response explanation, that was very helpful for me too. Thank you, Molly, for asking the question. Because what I'm hearing is concern about not us cooperating with locals, either wildlife people or their sheriff's departments, but in delegating. And I think I heard very clearly that we aren't delegating our responsibilities to anyone our responsibility to manage wildlife. And I am very supportive of cooperating and coordinating with the local affected locals that for a bunch of good reasons, including maybe this is just a speculation of mine, but I think that that these are always really dicey situations and we need as much trust and as much respect as we can get. And so I think the closer we get that to the communities that are affected, the better. My question is, does any money follow this MOU? In other words, are we paying the sheriff's departments and Mr. Flood to do this work, or are they doing it in their own capacities?
I'll try to answer that, Commissioner Baker. To my knowledge, this is right now there's not any discussion of a fiscal component of this. So the answer is no. I'll just stop there.
Thanks. Jim?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes.
Okay. This conversation is interesting in the context of last month's discussion with regard to intergovernmental relationships and partnerships and protocols as we were looking forward to the post-delisting scoping status. And so this is a good example of a current event that can help, I think, shape where we're going in the future. And so I think it's important that we maintain authority where that is clear, and find ways that we partner when it makes sense and it's consistent with state and local laws.
Thank you. Yeah, I have the same thought about looking forward with this kind of effort. Just one other quick question, Donnie. I like to loop back to the WAG, exploration they're doing with non-lethal tools and the chips and cowbells. I was wondering how the department's thinking about that, because it sounds like it would be considerable cost to the producer. Would that be part of a cost share program, or are we that far down the road just exploring these as potential non-lethal tools in the future?
Good question. They are, we're couching them as kind of pilot projects that for folks that are interested in them. And of course, we're trying to incorporate these in chronic conflict areas. And some of them have been already piloted a short period of time. For example, the colored collars with the cowbells and folks, the folks that were involved in that in 2019, thought enough of it, wanted to expand it in 2019, and other producers, I think, were interested as well. So some of those on the list of, like I said, 6 to 8 items, some of those are actually being incorporated right now, and others are still in the works. They are, and I would look to other staff if they have any information beyond what I have here, is to my knowledge, I'm not saying it's absolute, but to my knowledge, those are not a cost that's bared by the producer. Those are costs that I believe that we're covering with some of our funds that are dedicated for non-lethal tools. And so I don't know that they are. Now, there could be costs that are indirect because the producer has to, handle their cows one more time or something like that. But in terms of the material and the effort and all of that, I believe that we're funding those costs.
Yeah, that's correct, Donnie.
Great. Anything else you want to add, Steve, to that?
No, it sounds like Donnie may have also mentioned the individual, the company that has contacted us relative to the I will refer to them as the smart ear tags. And so, Donnie, did you include information about that project as well?
I just talked about the refurbishing, but no, I think you're, I didn't get to the one where you are. So please share.
Yeah. So this is one where we have heard from a manufacturer that is interested in working with livestock producers to produce an ear tag that is capable of taking in information about the livestock that is wearing that ear tag. And so this could be everything from heart and respiration rates to temperature, a number of physiological parameters for the animal that's actually wearing that ear tag. And so, you know, this has some interesting possibilities relative to being able to get information, real-time information about livestock that have an increased respiration or heart rate that may be associated with, you know, a stressful event. And so we've actually put a producer in touch with the company so that they can talk about what they believe would be most helpful and what might be of use. And so the manufacturer has been willing to play with the programming and the electronics of these units based on what he's hearing from the producer that he's working with in Washington. So, and our conflict specialist, Candace Bennett, has been the one that's acted as the liaison for that work to happen between the company and the producer. So that has some interesting, we're keeping eyes on that one, has some interesting potential.
Thanks. CalFit Bits. So are there any other questions on this topic of Northeast conflict? And fortunately, nothing Southeast to talk about recently, at least. Any of the committee members, any other questions?
Kim, I have a quick question.
Yes.
I may have misunderstood, but did you say that when wolves are collared, or some wolves are collared, you may consider putting bells on the wolves, or did I just totally misunderstand that?
You didn't, Molly. That's what he said, but I don't think that's what he meant.
Can we confirm that?
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, I am a little sleep deprived right now, so I'm not completely surprised I said that. But if most of you heard that, I've certainly said it. So let me correct it. It is on cattle. It is a color coded cloth collar that has a bell on it, and sometimes they this idea of attaching a transmitter that would normally go in the ear to that collar. So yeah. These are on cows, not wolves. My mistake.
No problem. I just wanted to be sure, because I thought that might decrease the efficacy on a wolf being able to take down prey without a bell attached.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on this item on the agenda? We will now move to, I believe, Julia is going to talk to us about the SEPA that's going on in regards to translocation. So, Julia.
Thank you, Commissioner. So, I will take us back to just about a year ago. If you don't mind, I'm going to share my screen with you all. I'm going to share a public update that was published May 24th of last year. So let me do that. And can you all see that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. So in this update, and if you want to find it yourself on your own screen, just go ahead and type in Wolf Translocation Update into the search bar on WDFW. Website, and it'll come up. But let's, I guess, do a little flashback and then I can open it up for questions and see if this gets to the root of this agenda item. So in 2018, we were directed by the legislature to evaluate the use of translocation for wolves using the SEPA process. And so that originally was going to be its own SEPA effort and its own environmental impact statement or supplemental environmental impact statement, most likely supplemental to the 2011 plan. So at that time last year, we had the potential of three different SEPA processes about wolves that were all kind of hurtling toward each other all at the same time. The translocation SEPA process, the one for the periodic status review, that's not a SEPA process at this time, but could be at some point. And then the one for the post-recovery plan, which we've talked about quite a bit and you all are familiar with now. So that was a lot, not only for the public to wrap their minds around, but also even internal staff, just a lot of different wolf efforts all coming together at once. And so we said, okay, translocation, it might be better to talk about this as a tool in the toolbox rather than necessarily something that needs to be guided by its own SEPA process that needs to be take place right now. So the idea of wrapping this into the post-recovery plan and evaluating translocation as a tool that would be considered in post-recovery, that was brought to the legislature, and they decided and signed a Four Corners letter to allow us to include that evaluation of translocation in the SEPA process for the post-recovery plan. That's detailed in this public update that you see there on your screen from May 24th. But I understand sometimes these things are about as clear as mud. So it may seem like the translocation SEPA process just kind of went away. And in a way it did, per the immediate translocation for statewide dispersal of wolves kind of went away for the time being, but not the translocation discussion, as in, is that a tool that our agency would want to consider for lots of different reasons, would either to facilitate statewide dispersal or any other litany of reasons that may come up in wolf management. And those are things that we intend to contemplate in as part of the post-recovery plan. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen right now, and then I'll just pause and see if that gets at what you all wanted to talk about today.
Barbara, you were interested in this topic particularly. Do you have any questions?
I think I understand where we're going, so I don't have any questions at this time, but thank you.
Anyone else?
Commissioner, this is Donnie. I would just add one item. That is, and I've been close to this one since the very beginning with the first step that Julie just described, all the way to the Four Corners letter. That is, I think it's where we're at and where we've always been is a commitment to do the SEPA process. But as you all know, that's a process. It doesn't predetermine whether that comes out the other end as a accepted tool or not accepted tool, or whether it's used or not used. It's just that SEPA process step that we've considered it. And so that's what we've committed to is conducting the process around SEPA, around translocation and SEPA. Rather than just a standalone, it's a part of the bigger post-recovery SEPA process.
Any questions or comments? Okay. So we have another item, and that is where we are with the periodic status review. The last report we got, we were hopefully close to bringing on the fellow to do the population modeling. So do we have an update on that, as well as where we are timeline-wise? Anybody, staff, is Eric going to report on this?
Julia, do you want to go ahead and start on this one and share the update?
Yeah, I can. Donnie, you may have more specific knowledge about the individual who brought on to do the modeling, but I can go ahead. I'm going to share my screen with you all again, and I'm going to pull up this timeline really quickly. So Donnie and Eric can certainly add to what I have to say, because I haven't been closely involved with the PSR planning. Previously, that was Stephanie Simic, and then right now it's really Ben Maletsky, who's working with the folks over at the University of Washington with this new postdoctoral student to complete the population modeling. But they recently completed a statement of work where our staff came together and talked about the needs of the agency and then what the University of Washington could do. And this is the timeline that they have for us. Can you all see that on your screen?
Yes.
Okay, great. So that postdoctoral student is already on board and I believe has already started to dive into this stuff. Right now, it's just looking at compiling all the data, so that we're in that stage right now. But I won't go through and read all those steps for you, but it's expected that a final report and model completion would be in August 2021, so August next year. And then from there, depending on what the model says, that would allow the agency to move forward with a recommendation about what that means as far as the wolf population goes biologically. But I'll let Donnie and Eric fill in any gaps that I have missed.
Yeah, I'll add a little bit both to the student and the major professor and then the timeline. The COVID stuff did interrupt us a little bit. We connected with UW and the major professor and worked through a timeline that kind of doesn't push that timeline too far back, gets that person on board as soon as possible and gets deliverable to us, but also understood that this interrupted all of our lives. And so you'll see here that one of the important elements for us is that was that April 2021 thing, a time period where we have something to look at. And then knowing that we want to incorporate some interaction right there, and there'll be follow-up questions, and they may be, oh, can you tweak it this way, or what does this mean, so that you all have an opportunity to look at it, but it's not signed, sealed, and delivered. You can have some follow-up questions and possibly some tinkering with it. The other item I'd add is that I was very encouraged. As I've gotten closer to this one, I've been pleased with what I've heard and seen. And I was very pleased as I talked with the major professor about their, they want to communicate more with you all and with the department staff. And even on a one-on-one level, they want to understand what your perspectives are, what your needs are. They're going to do the very clinical science work, but they understand that that then goes into a policy world. And so rather than drop off on your desk and in April, a draft product, and you say, oh, this doesn't meet the need at all, you missed the boat here, they want to have regular check-ins with you all so that that when you do get that that first report, that draft report, it's not a surprise to you that it meets your needs. It addresses all the items you hoped it would address. And so it doesn't have to be today, obviously, but I think we need to reach out and connect with the university. And if you all are inclined to, I'd like to take them up on that offer so that you have some touch points through this process.
That's a great lead into the question I was going to ask the committee. But before I do that, is there any other staff person who wants to add anything to this timeline overview? Sort of procedural questions. It is a postdoc. The person is a postdoc. Is that correct? That was because you said student, and usually.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. It is a postdoc. I did use the word student, but it's a postdoc.
Okay. Thank you. A couple of things that piqued me as I. One, I wanted to put forward to the committee, now that we've seen this, let's talk a little bit how we want the committee to engage. So I'd like your ideas. And then I was struck by a comment that Julia made regarding the SEPAs that are going on. And this is not at this point a SEPA. What would trip it into that? Why don't we take that first, and then would that come with the commission decision about listing, or take that first and then we can have a committee discussion?
Yeah, Commissioner Thorburn, this is Donnie again. So earlier in this process, we spent a lot of time thinking about that, and as we were mapping out what could be three, you know, concurrent SEPA processes. And this one's a little different in that you've had other, you know, potential changes in listing status for other critters. You would initiate. I'm gonna lay out two different paths.
Donnie needs to take his computer into the house. Can anybody else hear him?
I can hear him fine.
Yeah, I'm hearing him as well.
I can hear
Maybe
him
it's
too.
My computer.
I will talk slow too. Maybe that will help.
Barbara, see if turning off your video helps.
Okay, I will try it again. So I'm going to lay out two of the paths at least we brainstormed on about how or when SEPA would initiate for this particular item, for this periodic status review piece. So I think typically you would initiate, or the department would initiate SEPA process if you got to the update, the final update on the periodic status review that led you to believe that you're going to consider a change in listing status. So that would then, to do that change in listing status, you would initiate a SEPA process during that SEPA process, you would go through that change in listing status. So that's where the SEPA process kicks in, is if you have direction or you have knowledge that you're going to move that way. Now, the other one that we brainstormed on, and so I think this is a different path that would need to be fact-checked and confirmed and all those kinds of things, is if you were concerned about, let's say that you didn't know whether you were going to have a change in listing status, but if you did, if that did had a potential to happen, and you were concerned about the length of time that would tack on to starting that SEPA process after you reach that conclusion that you're going to do a change in listing status, you could potentially start the SEPA process a little bit earlier as a safeguard, if you will, so that if you do a change in listing status that's already initiated, you've saved yourself a few months. If you decided you didn't want to do a change in listing status, you would just end that process at that point. You would have initiated it when you really didn't need it, but you could just end the process. Did I explain that okay? And others with more experience, help me out a little bit.
So, Jim, I think you're muted, but you've got your hand up, I see, so.
Okay, this is Jim Anderson. First off, you know, I'm heartened by the openness and opportunity that will come along with regard to being able to follow what is going on and as policy implications come up that we'll be able to engage and not be caught in a here's the thing rather than really understanding it and making sure that it's going forward in the way that we think is really reflective of the way it should. With regard to the question about the interim or initial the two different SEPA processes, one being upon final update, so to speak, of the PSR, and the other being somewhere in between, is it possible that that if we move on something in between that, it kind of just flows into a more comprehensive kind of SEPA process, like the I don't know if that makes any sense, or does that make any sense? Or
it Commissioner Anderson, I think I'm tracking you. The SEPA process associated with the PSR wouldn't fold into another process that we're doing. Hearing that it would fold into post-recovery SEPA or any of that. It's a standalone, but I do think it is comprehensive in nature. I think that at that point, if you initiate SEPA for a change in listing status, it is a deep dive. It's comprehensive, as you've done with other species, but I don't think it folds into, that's where you were headed, I don't think it folds into an already established SEPA that's already begun.
Well, I guess that was, the question was the comprehensive nature. The thought was, are we just kind of just going off doing a partial and not having it be the full meal deal, so to speak? And I guess your answering is that once you make that call, then you're in, and it's just a matter of expedited timing, even though you don't have the final product at the start.
Correct.
Okay.
Great. Barbara?
So, Donnie, could you put that timeline back up? Is that possible?
I still see it on my screen. Julia shared it.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah,
hold on. I am experiencing technical difficulties as usual. Okay, I've got it. Yep, thanks. Well, I'm very, I thought we were going to get this sooner than August of 2021 or even April, but I am I'm very happy to wait because it sounds like it will be so comprehensive. So thank you for that. Also, the really good thing, well, I'm glad that Ben Maletsky is involved. He is the person who authored the PVA, the population viability assessment from 2016 that set the original goal for recovery at 2021. That was the most optimistic, and then the most pessimistic in that document was 2031. And so this is also going back to previous discussions that we've all had. And the real question is whether this, the PSR outlines, after they get done out doing all the modeling, do they outline barriers to recovery or suggestions for expediting recovery? Or is it up to us and perhaps the rest of the staff that are involved with this to derive that from this report?
Very good question. I'm gonna share what's in my brain right now, but I'm gonna circle back to all of you with a more complete answer because I'm gonna go back and review the statement of work in more thoroughly. They are looking at the current status of Washington wolves. But in doing that, they're, as you see even here on the timeline, they're going to do some scenarios as well. So I don't know if I would use the word barrier or those kinds of things, but they're going to be using more sophisticated, I was a part of the publication with Ben and thought really great of it, but times have already changed and there's already more sophisticated modeling approaches out there. So, and they're going to be doing that. And so I think they have, this is where the benefit of having an early on interaction with them, because if you would like it to speak a little bit to forecasting and barriers, then the sooner we kind of check in with them on that, the better. I think they have the capacity to do that, the technology and that kind of stuff. It's a matter of kind of what we can put on their plate, I guess, in the time period we'd like to get it back.
just as a follow-up, I am not asking for that right now. It would be very beneficial to us, I believe, to have people who understand this, the whole context of wolf recovery, to hypothesize about that. But I'm also cognizant about how much work the commission piles on staff. What I'm interested in is having a discussion about whether that's already included in the scope of this work, and then whether it would be something that would be worthwhile given all of the moving pieces to add. And what I'm really going back to here is when we were having a few months ago, we were having a discussion about whether we need a commission guidance document, much like the one that was prepared in 2011. And I think we all decided not right now, not until we know what's going on. Once we have some science, or at least some very well-educated guesswork about what the population dispersals and trends and all of that that goes with that, we may be able to synthesize that into some action pieces. And so please don't consider this my request for you to add all of that. I'm not going to do a big 30 or 40 question thing at all. I'm just interested in what the scope of this work is.
Absolutely. I will go back and dig a little deeper into this, into the scope of work and understand it at a level. I will get back to all of you on that. The other one that, just for your consideration, if you'd like, you know, let us know if you would like a opportunity to talk with the postdoc student and the major professor, you know, whether at one of your upcoming meetings or in another fashion, be happy to set that up so that we can, you know, early on we can kind of tease some of those things out.
Thank you.
Other comments from committee members? So what about Donnie's question? Would you be interested in having the postdoc join us?
Yeah.
Probably sooner than later.
Kim, this is Jim Molly.
Anderson. Go ahead, Molly.
I can be very brief. Absolutely.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. And I agree as well. And maybe not just the postdoc, but just the small team that's working on this, whomever that is comprised of. It would be very interesting to just do a little question and answer session with them.
This is Jim Anderson again. I think doing that early really gets us going in the right vein as a committee, and that we get dialed in and be focused. So I really like that.
Great. So Donnie, why don't you update yourself on the scope of work, and we'll maybe look at if it can be arranged, our next WOLF committee meeting will invite the postdoc and Ben, if he's available, and whoever else is working on the population modeling.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Question with regard to when that next meeting might be, are we looking at something in July, or are we not having committee meetings in July?
My thought is it would be, we've got a timeline here, the postdoc is supposed to be diving in, collecting the available data and that sort of thing. So I think we probably should plan on something in July, unless I hear any objections from other committee members.
I would second the sooner the better. Ben has already delivered all the demographic data to the postdoc student, so that's already occurred. And so the sooner we take that dive with a science team, probably the better.
Good. We'll get together and set up that meeting. Yes, Eric.
Yeah, so we do have a commission meeting right in July, I believe the very end of the month, the 30th and 31st. So there would be likely an associated committee meeting around that, but that's pretty late into the month. So I just wanted to make sure I was tracking that. What you were really, were you just kind of wondering that, Jim, or are you thinking that a separate meeting prior to that?
I kind of look at that late July as almost an August meeting rather than a July meeting.
I think, Eric, that we should plan on something in the interim and depending on what's going on, perhaps not hold a WIF committee meeting in association with the August meeting. Well, we can see what unfolds. But I think, as Donnie is saying, and I'm sort of feeling it, looking at the timeline, sooner than August.
Okay, so we'll look at some dates. The postdoc and maybe float some ideas by you, Kim, and the committee.
Sounds good. Yeah. Anything else on this topic? Okay. So with that ends the formal agenda. I would just ask if any of the committee members have or staff have any suggestions for upcoming items or any other questions that we want to cover. Donnie, did you want to say something?
Yes, Commissioner Thorburn, thank you. I just had two just awareness ones and really short here, just for you all and for the public listening in. So I'm not sure if it's on the website yet or not, but in related to the petition the commission received on wolves, that is going to be on the agenda for you'll receive a recommendation from the department at the June 26th meeting. And then the other one is just a awareness that we had a court date in the King County Court for the last year's litigation that was originally scheduled for, I think, 2 days ago. The courts have postponed that to June 22nd. I just want to make sure you're both aware of those two date items.
Thanks. This is Jim Anderson. I have a question with regard to the when we were talking about the post-recovery plan kind of sideboards or guidance or whatever we called it. We kind of left it that we were going to look at certain issues that in more detail. And one of them that, you know, kind of ticked for me is the discussion about translocation that got me thinking about what that kind of process or timeframes is going to look like over the next, you know, 6 months to a year, and whether or not some of that is coming up for us to be considering. I don't know if anybody's looked into that in any more detail, has tried to put any kind of calendar to that or not. So that's a question, I guess, to the staff.
That's a good point, Jim. So Julia, where are we in terms of the work on that plan? Is staff sort of still vetting, scoping? Have you started sort of envisioning any alternatives? Because along with the translocation, there are also a number of areas under the big category of conservation and management that we probably want to vet further. So we need to look at that in terms of WIF committee work and our meetings and all.
Yeah, so we're working on alternative development internally right now. We're working on that mostly with the WIF internal group and had a discussion with senior staff about that today as well. And really what we have as far as alternatives developed is really a lot of ideas on the table for discussion right now. So we still need to work internally to decide which of those ideas that we're going to serve up for discussion externally. And given that these committee meetings are public meetings, this is something where we need to do some more work internally to make a draft of ideas that's a little bit not in stone, because it's not an in-stone draft, but less spaghetti on the wall and more actual alternatives to be considered and either taken further or thrown out. So I envision more work on that within, let's say, the next 2 months or so. And then I would love for something to be able to go external in about probably around 2 months, I would guess. And so I would say, certainly we can talk about any of these topics that you want to before then, but I won't really have more of those ideas that are in a more structured, documented format till we have more internal discussion about it.
That's helpful. Jim, with that information, do you have thoughts in terms of Wolf Committee agenda and further discussion in the interim before we see the alternatives that are going to be put forward?
No, I'm good with what Julia presented, and it's just a matter of getting that lined out and thinking ahead for me, at least, you know, so that kind of organizing it.
So. Great. Thank you.
Kim, I have a topic.
Yes. Eric
here. Yeah, thank you. So this is sort of fairly late breaking. And I only bring it up because there's a nexus to Wolf Management and the discussion we had earlier about the MOU and the sheriff's involvement in trapping. Just highlighting or daylighting the fact that this week we received a letter from the Humane Society of the United States of America that is challenging Sheriff Bob Songer's work in Klickitat County related to cougar removals and use of hounds and kind of the associated authorities and the question about wildlife management authorities and the authorities by the initiative as far as use of hounds for scientific purposes and for public safety, et cetera. So it's fresh to us. We're digesting the material in the letter. They sent it to us, the governor's office and the attorney general, as a cover letter, but essentially they're telling us in that letter that they've sent the sheriff a letter, which is a notice to kind of cease and desist that action. So we're looking at that internally. We have a meeting set up next week to kind of figure out what it means, what our response may or may not be, and what that would mean to us down the road as far as legal considerations. And so I just wanted to bring that up. It's new to us. You'll hear about it. You'll probably see it sooner than later. And I just making the connection to the wolf world and what we do with our sheriffs in Northeast Washington related to management is likely to receive very similar interest and in inspection, as I think, by others on what we might try to build relationship wise with the sheriffs up there. So it's all connected, and I'm sure you'll be hearing more about this particular thing in the days or a couple of weeks or so to come.
Thanks. Any questions on that? Comments? Steve, you've been in your role for a little over a month now. Is there anything else that you'd like to report or bring up for the committee?
Thank you, Commissioner. Sorry, I was trying to multitask. We had a reported depredation that I'm getting field staff to. So I don't have anything additional at this time other than I had hoped it would have been a little bit of a easier transition in, and that hasn't quite been the case. And so been able to, let's just say, hit the ground running. And I'm just not so sure if I'm running toward Spokane or which direction I'm running right now.
Running to the fire.
Right. So, okay. Is there anything else? We have, I think, a little bit more time, and I was informed that a couple of people wanted to make comments. So with that, and no objections, we'll invite those who submitted a request, and I'll ask Melissa or Nikki to invite them to make their comments.
I can, Nikki, me, who do you want to go?
Let's see, I've got Paul Berkeland. Although, let's see, oh, okay, Paul raised his hand, fantastic. Okay, and do you want to open it for anybody else too, or just Paul? Kim?
Whoever requested.
Okay, I just wanted to give my little blurb so people knew what to do. So now we'll take public comment from attendees. As a reminder, everyone's currently muted, so if you have a question, please raise your hand. If you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you're on the phone, please press *9 and wait to hear. You have been unmuted. So the first person we will go with is Paul. See, it looks like Paul's using an older version of Zoom, so the only way I can get him to speak is if I promote him to panelist. Melissa, we should be able to move him back down afterward, right?
Yes.
Okay, we're gonna go ahead and do that. Go ahead, Paul. Paul, go ahead. Maybe. Okay, well, as we're figuring out Paul's sound
It says he's unmuted. Do you have to do something to unmute on our
side? As he entered as a panelist, he should be able to We should be able to hear him, and he has control of his own mic. Paul, it says your mic's connected.
I'll point out he's added in the chat, he's asked the question of, can you hear me, and stand by. So I think we can tell Paul that no, Paul, we cannot hear you, but we see you in the chat. And he's suggesting move on to someone else.
Okay, we can do that. Is there anyone else from the public interested in giving public comment at this time? If so, please raise your hand or press *9 if you're on the phone. Well, Kim, it doesn't look like anybody else has any comments.
All right. Paul's been moved off, I guess. So, because he said he was working on something. Do we want to try once more? Or?
Yeah, I'll try again. Let's see. Okay, Paul, you're unmuted and you're in panelist. And you can simply, if you have a question, you can type it too. I think that would be okay.
Doesn't seem to be working. So he could type in his question if he has one.
I guess what I'll suggest is hopefully we will solve this, but if we don't, Paul, I'll give you my email address. It's my name, which I think you can hopefully see on the screen there, but it's eric.gardner@dfw.wa.gov. That's eric.gardner@dfw.wa.gov. And if you did have something you wanted the committee to hear or a question, please send me an email with that, and I'll make sure I do the distribution to the committee members, and we'll find a way to get back to you.
Thanks, Eric. Mm-hmm. Okay, so with that, it seems we're done with the agenda and the reports. I'd like to thank everyone for listening in, and the staff for all of your updates and reports. We'll be working shortly on setting up a meeting, probably in the first couple of weeks of July, so that we can meet the postdoc and others who are working on the population model.
Kim, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we did get a late breaking notice from Paul that he does think he can make it work now. So if you're so inclined, I suggest we try one more time.
Okay, great. So he needs to be promoted. Yeah. Okay, there you are, Paul.
So,
you should be able to talk now if you want.
Well, shucks, I thought maybe third time would be the charm, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. Sorry I interrupted you there, Kim.
That's fine. I appreciate that. Okay, so Paul, if you would go ahead and send an email, I'll take a look at it. To Eric, I'll take a look at it. And with that, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Bye.